do anything is how you will do everything. And the lessons you learn in jiu-jitsu on the mat teach you to be a better human being off the mat. Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset.
Okay, well, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset. If you're new to our podcast, thank you for giving us a try. And what we're trying to do here is encourage you, if you've started your jiu-jitsu journey, to keep going. And for those of you who are interested in starting your jiu-jitsu journey, we're encouraging you to come in off the sidelines and join us on the mats. And we do that by trying to connect studying your jiu-jitsu with how it will teach you things in life. So my name is Pete Dealey, and I'm here with my professor, Professor Lucas Hubo. And Professor, welcome.
Hello, guys. Thank you, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, but I have to say, you know, you're charming and witty, intelligent, and, you know, I do my best to kind of cue that up, but there's only so much people can listen to you and I. Right. So we're going to have to bring in someone more charming, more witty, more wise, and we have that person today.
Yeah, that's what I'm here today. I'm looking forward for that.
That's how I got him back up. So we have two professors on, and one is the chief in addition to being a professor. And so we're going to welcome today Tom Dwiggins, and Tom's a veteran of the U.S. Air Force, and he's been in the fire service for 30 years. In 2016, he was promoted to the fire chief to our local department here in Chandler, Arizona. So he's the fire chief of the Chandler Fire Department, and he served there for 25 years. He's got a bachelor's degree in public administration and a master's degree in organizational leadership. He got his start in jiu-jitsu in 2008, and he was recently promoted to a black belt in April this year. And so I'm really excited because Tom is a part of our community, and I've got a chance to kind of experience him as a fellow student, as a teacher, and now professor. And so, Tom, we're really glad you're here. Welcome
today. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, Professor, let's start with you. What was on your mind? What do you want to ask Professor Tom here?
Well, I have a few things that I want to ask for sure. Tom, it's always a pleasure to be sharing the mats with a person like him, right? Such a leader on and off the mats from different reasons, and I think it's a perfect way for we start, right? Bringing new guests to this podcast that I have been doing. A lot of things that we do is try to relate jiu-jitsu to life, see how one helped the other, and is a good reflection, right, on ups and downs and everything else. So, Tom, I'm looking forward to know, I mean, to have you share with the others, because I might know some of the answers, but how old were you? Because we talk a lot about, on the last episode, on having kids doing jiu-jitsu, what's the parents' expectations? If you were starting jiu-jitsu, regarding your age, what's your expectations that first month or so? So I want to ask you, how old were you when you first start? And if you had any other background before that in different martial arts? And also about the reflection on your career outside the mat, right? On what stage of your career were you, and how do you think that you played a role between those two?
Sure. So my career is actually what got me into jiu-jitsu, and the story is probably a little different than most, but as you said, Pete, I've been in the fire service now for over 30 years. I started jiu-jitsu when I was 36 years old. I was a brand new training captain. So as a captain on the fire department, you're responsible for a response unit. I was responsible for a ladder truck, and you are responding day and night. I want you both to imagine right now, it's 3 a.m, you're sound asleep, and the loudest alarm goes off. You have 45 seconds to get to the truck, to get your gear on and get out the door. From there, you have about a 4-minute time to understand why somebody called 911. And let's just say in this case, it's a fire, right? And so you're making all of these plans in your head on what you're gonna do. You're trying to talk to your crew, prep them for what's going on. You're trying to understand what, you know, what the neighborhood looks like. Now you pull up, you have 30 seconds to look at this building, to read the smoke, to read the fire, and to make all of these tactical decisions. Mind you, 4 minutes and 30 seconds ago, you were sound asleep, right? And it's one of the neatest feelings in the world. The adrenaline you get from the day I started in the fire service until the last time I ran a call, it is just, it's irreplaceable. Well, I was moved from the captain's position on a response vehicle to training new firefighters, which was one of the best jobs in the world. I absolutely loved it. But I knew right away I had to replace that, right? I had to replace that adrenaline rush. And I needed that in my life. And at the time, one of our firefighters who I went to the academy with was in jiu-jitsu. And I remember sitting around the station and he was always talking about it. And of course I was fascinated watching UFC, you know, how are those little guys doing that? And so I decided I needed to get into some type of martial art. Well, I started in karate because they had a free class.
Like all of us.
Yeah. They had a free class if you brought your kids. Right. And so I my oldest son, who's old now, I said, hey, let's try this out. And, you know, you show up to class, and they do all the karate chop stuff. And, but I will say that at one point I got to kick and punch the bag, and man, that felt good. Right. I was like, I don't know what all these other things you're doing, but I like kicking that bag. Turns out my son, he didn't like it. And so he was like, hey, I want to do something else, Dad. I ended up staying there for a couple months. I think I even did a little karate tournament or something like that. But it wasn't long before I knew. I think I had like a 12-year-old kick me in the head and they're like, oh, he wins. And I'm like, I can't even fight back. So I'm like, I got to try something different. I ended up going to another school to do some kickboxing, which was really good. Such a great workout. But the head instructor there, every like once a week, he was a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. So he'd be like, hey, let me show you guys some jiu-jitsu. And man, he showed that to me. I'll never forget that first night. I couldn't sleep. I'm like, I don't understand what just happened to me. But I want to know. And, you know, I had a buddy there that we would start to train in our garage a lot. And you know, we were reading books and there was magazines, I think like, Gracie magazine was out.
Yeah.
There wasn't all the videos that there are now, but we were learning moves. I was hurt a lot because we were learning moves, not really defenses. And from there, that original person I told you, that firefighter at the kitchen table, I had run into him on an overtime shift and, he just said, Tom, why don't you come to an actual jiu-jitsu school? And I did. And so I was 36 years old. It was new for me, but I remember the night that I went to the class. I did a full night of learning the techniques and sparring. To this day, I will never forget driving home that night. And my shoulders literally dropped 2 inches. And it was stress, right? That was gone. And I knew right then, I'm like, I promise you, the first day I saw my wife, I told my mom, I just saw the girl I'm going to marry. And I married her. Mm-hmm. The same thing was with jiu-jitsu. I went home and told my wife, and I'm like, I'm going to be a black belt, right? And the rest is history.
So, Tom, I mean, at 36, you're, you know, this point in time, your career is launched. I mean, you're a professional, you're not a new professional, you're a professional that, you know, you're well into your career, you know what you're doing, you know what you want to do. You've been in the Air Force, you've been in very high stress situations, you're a veteran in the military. As a 36-year-old full-grown man, you know, coming into something new, were you approaching it primarily as a sport, as a martial activity, a stress reliever, you know, a replacement for adrenaline? What, I mean, I can appreciate your attraction to like committing to something, because I said more or less the same thing in my first, you know, week. I was like, I'm going to get my black belt before I'm 65. Then, you know, it doesn't matter to me that, you know, when I'm winning. So I resonate with that. But I wonder what your mindset was when you, I realize you went into karate and that as a replacement, but what else was it?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Originally, I went in because, you know, I did. I needed something. I played sports, you know, intramural sports with the city. I was always trying to do something. And so I wanted to try something new out. And I needed that. You're right. I needed that adrenaline. But I got to say, once I got to my first first class with the kickboxing instructor, and I saw how complex it was. And it was complex, but it was absolutely fascinating, right? And then going to my first like true jujitsu school, the same thing. For me, Pete, I gotta be honest with you. I've always been a lifelong learner. I've always been taking a class. I've been in school. I've been doing, you know, something to progress myself, or, you know, just out of curiosity, I wanted to learn something. And jujitsu, especially for the adult, it brings you back to that learning stage, right? Because yes. No matter how athletic you are, how fast, big, strong, it doesn't matter, because you have to learn the techniques. And the other great thing about it is, you know, when I went through my graduate program, I set a goal and I want to get this and then I'll be done, right? It was very apparent to me quickly that jujitsu is a never-ending book. You can read as many chapters as you want, as fast right. as you can, and their chapters are being added much quicker, right? And so, you know, there was a satisfaction I had there in, you know, in continuing to learn. And then, and the final thing, and I think this was so important in my life, and I didn't recognize it then, and I do now, is that I've always been wired the same way. And I'm kind of the high and tight, right? Right out of the military, I go into the fire department, which is kind of a paramilitary organization. And I'm the guy that always shines my boots and, you know, always make sure my shirts are pressed and ready. Well, jujitsu is a whole new identity, right? Yeah. And it allows you to not have to be that, especially, you know, as a captain and certainly now as a chief, I have to hold myself a certain way and I have to look a certain way and I have to say certain things and I can't say certain things. But in the mats, on those mats is the sacred place where nobody cares where I work. Nobody cares what I do. They don't care about my rank. They just want to train. They just want to have that fellowship where we can all grow together, which is why jujitsu is the most special place, you know, those mats on earth. But yeah, I realize a lot more, to answer your question, of those mm-hmm. things now. At the time, I don't think I had that vision of that yet, but right. And it has evolved into, it is now, it's a counterbalance to me, right? It's,
yeah.
It's the person I want to be, compared to the person that I can't always be because of the position that I hold.
Yeah, that's, Professor Lucas, I got two professors. I'm going to, my Professor Lucas here, you had a nice piece of writing that you wrote recently that really, to me, links up a little bit of what Tom's saying. And maybe you could talk a little bit about, I mean, jujitsu in terms of it being something that challenges you and transforms you in equal proportion. I mean, Tom's 36, he's a full grown man. He's not a kid coming to play a sport as much as he's a person, you know, and he's recognizing this as a tool to move him towards being the type of person that he wants to be. Maybe could you talk a little bit about that from your perspective? And maybe if you've seen themes among the top jujitsu players, performers, and that integration as a person where their mind, Tom talks about, hey, intellectually, I had to figure things out, to link that to my body. And that also led to sort of character development in a way maybe wasn't apparent on day one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. Like I like a lot to hear all this come from people that are so successful already, like Tom, his area, right? And The mats have an old saying, just that the mats doesn't lie, right? You can, the character is revealed right away. The person that is, the way how they want to hold your gi or, right? The first action already, you can detail and understand how things are going to happen. And we also talk a lot about ego, right, on the mats. That's something that, like, jiu-jitsu is for everyone, but not everyone is for jiu-jitsu. If you don't know how to handle yourself with pressure, with situations, like be humble enough in a way that you need to understand when you're going to tap and figure out this as a learning process. And having someone like a professor slash chief Tom, starting at 36 years old, athletic, firefighter captain, Air Force veteran, and a white belt, right? In a brand new situation. So if wasn't for that type of mindset that he has on the learning, a long journey, being patient, right? He probably won't be here today talking with us, right?
Right.
It's really nice to see this happening. And also, Tom, I want to ask you, what if type of effects later on, right, that you understand now, you went to that position that you were at today quite fast, I imagine, right? Since you started as a firefighter to now, and also doing jiu-jitsu at the same time, what type of relations that you see between both a sport, like sport in the professional life, and bring you to that a drive that you have on achieving and doing your very best and all the time?
Sure. So to answer your question, yes, I did. I did move up. We call it moving up the ladder pretty quickly. And I've always been one of those people that has celebrated success in life for a very short amount of time and moved on. And I can recall winning my first gold medal at a jiu-jitsu tournament. And I was like, I couldn't sleep for a week. I was just like, I think I'm a UFC champion of the world, right? And then fast forward to like my 20th competition. And it was like, put the medal on the part of the, you know, the second seat in the car, and then you forget about it. And it's time to move on. It's time to get better. It's time to learn a new guard. And so I've always been driven in a way that I can set goals, I can achieve goals. And it's the same, the mat and real life, whether you're a parent, whether you're in the business world, whether you're in leadership, there are so many translations that go back and forth that it's amazing. And so, you know, I think that, you know, me being in jiu-jitsu brought out some things in me that helped me understand like how to navigate through my professional career. And not only like, so I kind of like bifurcate here where you have my leadership career, which is a whole nother, a whole nother question, and my professional career. But I can tell you like, just what you said, Professor, how do you deal with pressure? Well, guess what? When you get out of a truck and someone's house is on fire, and they're like, my kid's inside the house right now. You think that there's pressure when it's your turn to compete? Like, be in that moment. Right, like, right. All the neighbors are outside pointing at the house. You're like, yeah, I can see it's on fire, right? And you're making these decisions that have massive consequences, right? Like, you can't be wrong. And I always say, when people call 911, what they want is my crew to drop everything they're doing, get to their house as fast as they can, and have the best day in performance that they've ever had in their entire lives. That's what the average person wants. And they should, right? From an emergency response, mm-hmm. Responder. And so, it's really important that you can deal with that pressure, and that pressure comes in a lot of different ways on the mat. It's somebody, you know, flipping my legs over my head and squashing me, right? But at work, you know, it could be in an emergency operation, or even for me now in my position, you know, I go to meetings sometimes and you're put on the spot, or you're put in a hard situation, you're dealing with politics. Even though it's not a physical pressure, it's a mental pressure, it's a little bit emotional. And what jiu-jitsu has taught me is that there's always a way out, right? It's not always apparent what the way out is in right. the very second, but if you can just find one little crack to keep breathing, right, then it'll make itself clearer.
So Tom, that's such like, that's an extraordinary statement, you know, I mean, and so just so that we don't kind of gloss over this and we take a second to kind of sure. make sure everyone's heard what you just said. Because when I see you, and I, we're roughly the same age, I'm a little bit older than Tom, although when we stand next to each other, I look a lot older next to the athletic, handsome young man, Tom. But I mean, when I see you, sometimes I think about how many stories you must have in your life, and that those stories are probably like very profound, that you probably have an unusual number of like very serious things that you've witnessed, that you've been a part of. And I've had a pretty meaningful career in the business world, and I have had lots of pressure that has come with that. However, when I reflect on the pressure that I have felt, I have not been standing at 3 o'clock in the morning with a family saying to me, if you don't perform at the highest level, my child is at risk. And that's the most precious thing in the world to me. And I'm holding you responsible for making this night not the worst night of my life. That's not something that most any of us, there's a tiny sliver of human beings that have had that. So in to just take a second and to say, is it fair to say that on the mats, when there's very little consequence, really, is the experience of rolling with another person and being in a position where you're losing the position, did that translate over to you finding a little bit of space emotionally in those high pressure, you know, critically important situation? Did it help you in that? I mean, is that, that's kind of what I heard, but I don't want to assume.
No, you're spot on. It did. And I think the way it helps you, because as I said, one's a very physical pressure, and one is more of a psychological, emotional pressure. But both of them, you know, as I said, if you take time, if you can stop for a second, the answer will make itself clear, right? And so I really do think there was a translation to me, and I use the word confidence. It gave me a confidence maybe that I didn't have, right? Mm-hmm. Which is crazy, because I guess I could argue that fighting a house fire is a lot harder than doing a 5-minute sparring session, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I will say this, and I would tell this to anyone listening, is you can make whatever it is you're doing, whatever you want in your mind. And sometimes I can do that. I can convince my mind that it's, that everything is riding on this, right? And I can elevate whatever it is I'm doing. It could be jujitsu, it could be studying, it could be my own professional career. And so, yeah, for me, it's about that confidence of, okay, listen, you have a skill set in that you can be in really bad positions, and you can find a way out of it, right? It's still not fun, and you're not sure, in a happy place, but you can find your way out of it.
Yeah, I think that's, and so if you know, you're listening to the podcast, if you're in the military right now, if you're in, you know, any of the services in which, you know, your life has a lot of very extreme and real pressure, life and death situations, or if your life doesn't, you have, you know, you're in the business world or your focus is your children, all of these things, there's applicable benefits in that. For me, Tom, I, you know, the expression is how you do anything is how you'll do everything. And so, you know, when you approach, you make sure your shirts look right, you're approaching things that you want to do things right. And then that seems to carry through, that detail is present throughout your life. Not everybody will get to see you in person. You know, I'm looking at you, I get to see you. And Tom holds himself with, there's a gravitas that comes with Tom. Tom walks in the door. He just demands a certain amount of respect just by the way he holds himself. And I don't think anybody would react differently to that. And I think that comes both with some natural, just who you are, but I also think it's a lifetime of being in very difficult situations, leading. You have a lot of practical experiences leading people through difficult things. So going back to what the professor was saying just a little bit ago, as an adult coming to jiu-jitsu myself, so you walk in, you're this person of accomplishment. A lot of people look up to you, you're leading things. And now you're a white belt and nobody knows who you are and they don't care who you are. You're just some old guy on the mat with this 20-year-old kid. What new meat on the mats. You know, you know what I've been going through. You might remember what I'm going through right now. So was there ever conflict in terms of your identity as Tom, the leader, and the person who's the expert, and then your identity as the beginner? And did you have any rub between your ego as like, listen, you guys don't know who I am, and the humility of, look, I'm a beginner and I'm going to start the way everybody starts here? Or was it just supernatural to assume those roles? I'm wondering if you had any friction.
Yeah, so that's a great question. There was no friction whatsoever. You know, there's a term that we use in leadership is, you know, before you can lead, you have to be able to follow. And good leaders are good followers. If you think about jiu-jitsu and the mats, it's very similar to the military/fire service in that there's a hierarchy. There's a set of organizational norms or mat norms. We bow onto the mat. You know, we don't talk when the professor's teaching. So it's really structured perfectly for someone like me. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as me saying, well, I'm a captain, I'm this, whatever, you have to understand at that time, I was content with who I was as a professional, but I wanted to be someone different in my personal life.
Right.
So for me, I fully embraced, and not that I had a choice because I got triangle 7 times by the same guy the first night, right? But I fully embraced being a student, and I love being a student. I mean, yes, I have a black belt now, and I think that that's cool. Am I comfortable being called a professor? No, I'm not. Am I comfortable standing next to Professor Lucas? No. Do I wish I was just standing in the line with the guys and girls? Yes, right? Because that's what I love. I remember when Professor Lucas was like, I was going to promote you to brown belt. And it was like, it was an awkward feeling because I'm like, no, I was just hoping to be a purple belt forever. You know? But that is the beauty for me personally. The beauty of jiu-jitsu is I don't have to be the professional person. Not that I'm unprofessional on the mats, but I get to do, it's like you get a second life, right? Mm-hmm. That is amazing with the coolest people in the world that I would never hang out with in my life if it wasn't for jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And it really has, rounded me out. It has, is given me such good perspective that I bring to my professional, just being with a younger generation. And understanding when I listen to them talk about what's important to them, I can use that and I can apply that to leadership when I'm hiring young firefighters because they're the same age. And so, yeah, no, Pete, we all have ego and I have ego and I know it. And you know, it'll come out. It comes out when we spar sometimes, maybe it comes out when we lose. But in general, I can tell you when I walked in there, I was very comfortable. My first professor, my current professor is the most awesome person in the world, but my first professor, and I think you've met him, Pete.
Yeah.
Is an amazing person. I'm one of those lucky people that can say I've trained for 2 teams and I've trained with a lot of people and I've never had a bad experience. Mm-hmm. Every person I have come in contact to in jiu-jitsu has been the most welcoming people in the world. And so, yeah, for me, you know, it was great. It was great to be just Tom, the white belt, the piece of meat that everyone gets to beat up on, right? And sometimes being at the bottom rung on the ladder is cool because you're like, I have a lot of rungs to go, right? Higher up the rungs go, it doesn't get any easier. That's what
people think. No responsibilities, right? Everything is on you. Everything is fun. Tom, let me ask you this. It seems like at the beginning, you got super enthusiastic about jiu-jitsu, but it makes me feel also is was and still probably a part of that a day, like a therapy almost, right? Like it's a day of the, a time for a day where you can just try to forget a little bit things that happen and pressure and, you know, outside the mat and just be a more relaxed version of yourself. Is that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes. You guys let me know if I'm telling too many stories, but when I was in the, when I was in the Air Force, it was the early 90s. This might have been 92. I was stationed at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, and we would get hurricanes, and this one hit us head on. And I'll never forget this experience of going through a hurricane and the winds and the rain and, you know, all of that stuff. But the most important experience is the eye went directly over where we were. And when that eye went over, the sun pops out. And it's not windy, right? And it's just like, it's just beautiful day out, but you know, you're like, I'm dead smack in the middle of a hurricane right now, right? And the back end of the hurricane's always worse than the front end. That's one thing you figure out pretty quickly. Think about jujitsu. When I step on those mats sometimes, and it's not just me, it's all of us, our home lives, our, you know, our, what's going on with our family, our professional careers, our relationships. It's like this hurricane that's going around. And I always say the mats are the eye of the hurricane, right? You're only going to get an hour to an hour and a half, however long you're there, of that beautiful weather where, you know, you can just relax and you don't have to be, you know, engaged in everything. And then you walk out the door and you get home and you're like, oh, it's back. Right. But it's, you know, for me, yeah, I've learned to really embrace that moment, and it's been therapeutic. I'll tell you another really important aspect of that is, and I know Professor Lucas, you and I have talked about this, but the ability to focus is so important in everything you do in life, whether it's with your family, whether it's on the mats in jujitsu, or it's in your professional life. And when you can shut out everything, you can focus, right? And I know when I put my bare foot, that first step on that mat, I can feel that cold mat, and it's like a instant trigger for me to, like, okay, be in the moment. In jujitsu, if you're not focused, you're getting submitted, right? Mm-hmm. You have got to be present the entire time. And you know, outside of jujitsu, that's hard. You got your phone going, you got your emails, you got people, you know, wanting stuff. And so I've really come to appreciate that time as a time for me. Professor Lucas, Pete, and Paula have been trying to get my wife to sign up. And I'm like, don't you understand? She's part of the hurricane.
That's right. Yeah, she's looking for that same eye that you are, Tom. She's like, that's one not hour exactly. Where I can take a break.
Exactly. Go train. Get that.
Let me take a second and ask Professor Lucas if one of the things that Professor Tom said applies to you as well, because I think this is an interesting idea. When Tom was promoted to be a black belt, at one of the promotion ceremonies, you talked about this notion of imposter syndrome, right? Like, hey, even you beginners, as you go from white belt to blue belt, you might have a sense of like, hey, I don't want to even wear the blue belt, you know, but the black belt is a different thing, because now it's a terminal, you know, you may have distinctions within being, you know, stripes on the black belt, but effectively you're now the expert. You're now supposed to know the most in the room. So Professor Lucas, when you got your black belt, did you have any of those feelings? I mean, did you have any notion of like, now, because for you, you know, you start at a different point in your life. So did you have a sense of, it's about time, these guys finally give me the black belt, what took them so long? Or did you have any of those other feelings like, oh no, now I'm wearing the black belt? Or where did you fall in that spectrum?
So I think we all gonna have the like a bittersweet, you know, feeling about that. As much I was super excited, looking forward, and like, yes, like I want this, I get this, I got this, and everything. You question yourself sometimes, right? But not in a, I would say, not only in a technical way, like about, well, do I know what I need to know? But it was more like, am I ready to be a black belt, like as a person? Because that's I think is the most important part, as in being a black belt in jiu-jitsu doesn't reflect only your technical level. but who you are, how you compose, how you, you need to be a leader already, right? Like a black belt, you're a professor, regardless if you're a teacher or not, that's how people will call you.
Right.
And everything that you do on and off the mat, like everyone is looking, right? Like we do a lot of hangouts with our school, with our teammates and everything. We need to, remember yourself that you, you're still on that position.
And, right.
I mean, exactly what Professor Tom was saying about his being that guy on the fire department and the Arizona community, but also now he's on our school as well, right?
Yeah.
So I was, I always had some professors that I was always look up to for them being really good in jiu-jitsu, but also a person, a good example to be followed, right? Right. A good husband, a parent, good drives to do other type of business and always engage with the community. And I was excited, really excited for that, for receiving the black belt, but even more for what has to come after you get the black belt.
Right.
A lot of people say that once you get the black belt, everything's just starting. It's just, you just turn the page. Now you are really start to understand a little bit more jiu-jitsu, and the fun just started there. So it's a long learning experience. It's, the book never ending. And I'm just like enjoying every moment that I have doing that.
Yeah, that's my, right. That's Tom's metaphor early on, right? Like as fast as he can read, the chapters are being written faster than he can read them. It says no day off, no days off for you guys. You guys are black belts no matter where you're at. And Tom, I imagine being the fire chief, like that's a layer of that. There's never a time where whatever you do, you get into a scuffle, you get, it's news. Like you're never not, you know, not being looked at in a sense. So Tom, we talked a little bit about like, it fed something in you early on when you started, you hungered for a particular dynamic and you found that dynamic in jiu-jitsu. It had a transference into it. You grew as a person, had a spiritual component in terms of attracting you towards the person you wanted to be. And it gave you, even in the most extreme circumstances, some practice on breathing amidst, you know, the most pressure-filled things possible. The people who listen to this are going to fall along all kinds of spectrums of what is the challenges that are in their lives. There are going to be some people, you know, I look at your life and I think, man, you've experienced all these things that are so extreme. And there's probably someone that you could look at that go, oh man, that person is really, you know, they've had the most extreme. And then, you know, versus somebody whose life maybe is very a contented experience that. So Professor Lucas and I talk about, you know, jiu-jitsu's for everyone. When you think about talking to the person who hasn't tried it, except for your wife, we're going to leave her out of the conversation, everybody but her, like, what do you think would be the reason to try it? Like, why would you advise somebody to spend some time on the mats versus other things they might do?
Well, I think that, and we've been talking about it this afternoon, is that jiu-jitsu does, I mean, when you first look at it, it's a fighting sport. And the first thing that's always going to come to mind is the physical health. And we hear that all the time. Hey, I'm here for, you know, to get in better shape, to get stronger. But it doesn't take long. It literally, for some people, for me, it took a day, for some people, weeks, months, where you start to see the other benefits. And the other benefits are there, the emotional resiliency, the mental resiliency, you know. And so for me, I would just say that if I was talking to someone, and I do this all the time anyways, I say that it improves you as a person, right? Not as a fire chief, not as a father or a mother, but just in general as a person. And jiu-jitsu teaches you so many things. I mean, how many times have we heard Professor Lucas say, focus on technique, strength over technique, right? And you think about that statement and how profound that is. And we apply it to, okay, yeah, so you need to, you know, the proper technique in jiu-jitsu is always going to beat, you know, strength. Maybe not at first, but once you really understand it. But I would challenge everyone and say, well, why don't we translate that over to our personal lives and say, you know, strength versus technique, you know, maybe I'm having a relationship issue with my children or with my spouse. And it's really easy for me to get mad and be aggressive and yell or do this or, you know, whatever it is. Why don't I use technique and try to listen and try to understand and try to empathize and try to find some alternative way to deliver the same message? As a fire chief, I have 100% positional authority to do whatever I want. I can write policies, you know, I can force people to follow. But the reality is that's using strength, right? That's using strength and this hierarchy power versus technique of how about I include people? How about I ask them questions on how they think we should deliver a service? How about I get feedback? How about, you know, I inspire them? You know, all of those things. And so that's one example, Pete, of where we can take and you have to really be in the moment to understand what's going on the mats, but we can take those lessons and we can bring them to, you know, to our personal lives, whatever that looks like.
So Tom, let's just to paraphrase what you're saying here, just so that way we can maybe, I want to make sure it's clear to folks listening, because you said, I think, a lot of different things, but when you talk about becoming a better person, right? I mean, what you're, I think, expressing is that rather than your natural inclination, that if you take a second and develop, if your natural inclination is to do one, but you can develop 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, now you're approaching things with a different set of tools, right? Like, the professor, I think, is on number 605 different ways in which he's submitted me, right? He has like a lot of tools in his toolkit. And so as a jiu-jitsu professor, you know, he's instructing me by, you know, submitting me in these various different ways, which is his way of teaching me. But as a leader, like, if you only have one way to lead, then only the people who are going to respond to leadership Tom version one, it's only going to be a subset of people. So for you to lead the most amount of people the most effectively, I mean, I'm hearing that like your techniques personally mean that you have a lot of different options in how you're going to deal with any given situation. I mean, is that kind of what you're saying, or?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Is it's in the fire department, we always say, you know, you're putting more tools in your toolbox, right?
Right.
If you walk around and you need and we fix problems, that's what we do. Whether it's the fire chief, you know, I fix big problems. Firefighters fix, you know, emergent problems. That's what we do for a living. And so if you have one tool in your toolbox, well, that's all you have. But as you start to grow as a human being and you start to kind of step out of yourself and really understand the dynamics of people, right? And that's, I'm in a leadership position. I don't lead programs. I don't lead policy. I lead people. And right. People are the most dynamic thing in the world. And they change. Just when you think you figure them out, they change, right?
Right.
And so, yes, I have to have a lot of options, you know, on how I can navigate people to, you know, effectively deliver the highest level of service, emergency services for us, or, you know, take fire department out of it. You're leading people to serve a purpose, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's important that we have different ways to do that. And it really comes down to like what we say is in leadership is power bases, right? And if strength is always your power, you're missing out on so many things. You can see the camera here. On my right side of my chest, it says fire chief.
Right.
Okay. When I wear a gi, I have a black belt. If I do everything pointing at you do this because I'm the fire chief, or Professor Lucas stood up and said, quit asking questions, quit, you know, I'm a black belt, just listen to me, trust me. Mm-hmm. That gets old after a while. People will follow it, right? Because you have the organizational authority to do it or the expertise. But when we lead from the other side of our chest, and if you can see on the other side of my chest is my name.
Right.
If you lead from values and character, and reputation of who you are, people will run through walls for you. People, Professor Lucas, I said this on my black belt speech. I wasted an entire 2 years of my life getting a graduate degree in leadership when I could have just followed him around for a couple of weeks and been like, oh, I got it. I know what to do.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you said that, Tom, because I feel the same way. And Tom and I are meaningfully older than Professor Lucas. And you're touching hundreds of people. Professor Tom, just to divert to Professor Lucas. Like, as a leader, you're touching hundreds of people's life every single day, and not some like ethereal, you know, I'm setting a policy or something. They're coming and they're looking at you and they're looking for validation and they're looking for instruction. And so, I mean, when you hear Tom talk about, you know, developing these techniques as a leader, I mean, there seems to be a very direct correlation to what you're doing at the school, because you have a bunch of different ages, you got a bunch of different genders, a bunch of different, I mean, you got the gamut of humanity looking to you, which means that you have to respond to them where those people are at. And there's no, as a business person, there's no way that that community thrives as a business if people come in and they feel like, hey, listen, it's the professor's way or the highway. And we have a very thriving community. So, I mean, when you hear him talk about being a fire chief, does that resonate for you as a professor of our school? I mean, is that having a
connection? Oh, first, connection? I appreciate the kind of words from both of you guys. I learned a lot from Tom, and I learned a lot from all of you guys. I like to observe a lot. Okay. And on that way, it's, whatever I can take, whatever I believe I can take from other person to make me a better person, I will take it. And being the way how we're going to try to react to a problem, the way how I'm going to handle a situation, the way how I'm going to, train, whatever it is. I try to do that, right? And it's something that I put as literally as my everyday goal. Try to be able to recognize opportunities to learn and become better. And I'm lucky, I guess, to have guys like you two right by me all pretty much every day, where I can get so many benefits from it. And I like to study leadership. I don't have a 5% or less than that, probably 1% on what both of you guys have on this. But I like, and again, I'm here listening and trying to make my notes, learning from that, and try to apply in the best way as possible. But what Professor Tom, Chief Tom, was saying, and that I wanted to ask you again, Tom, is I feel that jiu-jitsu, it balances ourselves, right? Like, if you are someone aggressive, you will be able to kind of cool down a little bit more and be able to handle situations better. If you are too passive, you're going to have the confidence to be able to defend yourself and speak up, look to people's eyes, right? And have this confidence that jiu-jitsu gives to us. But also, I believe jiu-jitsu gives us a good understanding on body language. I'm saying that because when you're sparring, you sometimes can predict what your partner is going to do on how they start to move, right? And applying that for a leadership world, which you involve, do you believe or do you feel something similar to that, the way how you approach to your firefighters or to different situations, thinking on that, like in different ways with different body languages? Is that make any sense what I'm trying to compare here?
Yeah, Professor, not only does it make sense, but there's a whole science behind it. You know, when we talk about IQ, it's our ability to, you know, understand, you know, broad concepts. But when we talk about EQ, it's what's called emotional intelligence. And it's our ability, I call it reading a room, right? Our ability to walk into a room and deliver a message or have an interaction. It can be a meeting, it can be just a conversation. And understand by the body language from the person across from you, really how they're feeling. And it's important because just like in jiu-jitsu, when I feel your hips shift or when I feel your knees pinching my leg, I know a knee bar is coming and I got to move, right? Well, it's the same thing as maybe I'm having a conversation with them and I'm in tune with their body language. So I have to shift myself. You know, maybe it's the way that I'm delivering the message. Maybe it's the message. Maybe I need to pause and let them talk right? I can feel that, you know, they're not comprehending. So 100%, yes, you are spot on that. And it is so important these days, because, you know, so many people want to do what I'm doing right now. And that's just talk, right? I just want to talk so you can hear me.
Right.
And they don't want to like talk to try to have people understand things. Right. And that's a two-way communication process where, you know, they can ask questions and they can be engaged, and you learn more by listening than you do talking, right? It's really hard to learn something when you talk, except for I really just made that person angry because I can see their body language. But yeah, I love that you brought that up, because I've never thought of that concept. But it's so true what you're saying. It really is, and it's an important part of not just leadership. As a father talking to my children, right? As a husband talking to my wife, as a friend talking to a friend, right? Those are things that we can take from the mats and say, hey, we can, by feeling, by seeing, you know, we can adjust to that and try to change the message.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of you do. Most people, they don't listen. They're just not talking, waiting for their turn to talk. You know, like they're not really listening. They're just like, okay,
yeah,
is it my turn to talk again? And that creates a brittle relationship between people, because there's no real exchange there, right? It's just people taking turns, you know, instead of, you know, people listening to each other. And when you talk about, oh, you can feel a positional shift on the mats, and that has an analogy to when you walk into a room, you can feel by people's body language that this is an upset group of people, and they need, you know, they need to be met with a listening ear, because they have a lot of things that they need to say before you say anything. And to me, you know, those, your leadership styles both evoke a very stark difference in my mind. So there are leaders that are good to lead mercenaries. So like a mercenary will follow because of the reward. So in the business world, you know, it would be money. In the jiu-jitsu world, perhaps it's just to get the other belt. But those people's relationship to what they're chasing is brittle, because if they can't get the money, or they, you know, they refuse the next stripe or whatever, then they're going to leave the process. But then there are other people who are warriors, and those people are in pursuit because of a principle or because of a deep connection to an idea. And I think your relationships to the things that are important to you, you hold deeply, and they're not just things you do, they're part of who you are, and people resonate with that. And then when you share it with us, you listen to us. So instead of like, hey, I've achieved this success, I've achieved these expertise, you need to listen. I have felt from the moment I've walked in dialogue with you both. And that's something that, you know, has enlisted me on the warrior side of this experience. Like, I'm committed to jiu-jitsu, not because I'm likely to ever have a contract as a UFC fighter. I think that's a distant opportunity, but that I feel much of what it's done to enhance like your characters, and I'm attracted to that. And I think that's a special thing for me to be a part of. And I think in your own venues, you guys carry a lot of the same kind of traits in that direction. Professor Lucas, I promised Tom that we're not going to keep him forever. That's okay. So as we move into sort of like the end of an hour here, what might you have anything you want to kind of ask him before we make our turn into the last section?
Yes, actually, as in, but before the question, I just want to make a note here, because one of the many lessons that I learned from Tom was talking about again, be able to learn body language, but also the way how you are using your body language, right? And making a connection what you're saying right now, Peter, on be able to listen to someone is not just keep quiet and thinking on your turn to talk, but make yourself in a way exposed in a way that that person is the most important person for you right now. And I remember Professor Tom once saying to me that being on that position that he is today, so many people come to him to have a lot of problems and have a lot of pressure and try to understand a situation better. And he told me that he got his phone he turned off in front of that person. He put inside a door on his table. And that says that everything. He doesn't need to say anything else, right? Right. He's just saying, you are the most important person in the world for me right now. My phone is off and I'm here for you. And right on. And then after, you can feel how everyone feels after that. So I think that was something really important that I tried to carry with me after. I never thought about that, but after Professor Tong told me, I tried to carry with me every time that I need to deal with some similar situation like that.
Yeah, for sure. And it is, yeah, we all feel like we're taking someone's time, right? And that it's so precious. But you're right, you make these nonverbal statements by like even the way when I'm in, you guys are in, you can see my office right now if you're watching the video, but where I sit, you know, when I move my chair away from behind the desk and actually sit across from them, it says there's no barrier between us, right? The phones are off, it's just you and I. The door shut. Let's just talk about whatever you want. I don't have to be anywhere. Like, if this takes all night, then let's do it. And the reward to that is you get to hear the truth, and you get to help people, right? And I do sometimes. Oftentimes I have people come to my office that are going through some horrible things, right? And they don't know who to talk to, and for whatever reason, it's me, and I appreciate that. And I don't want to lose that. I don't ever want to lose that trust or that confidence. And so you have to do that. And Professor, I would say that the same to you, is that you're in the same position. I know for a fact, in our gym, that people come to you with non-jujitsu related issues. And I think that that's a testament to the culture that you, and I say you, because it starts with the leader, has created, that this experience is more than jujitsu. It's about life. And sometimes people have no one else to turn to. You are it, right? And it's such a, there's such a great responsibility to that. And when those times come, I mean, that's what leadership's all about, right? Nope. The day I retire here, nobody's going to, 2 weeks later, they're not going to remember what station I built or how many ladder trucks, but the people that sat down with me 40 years from now will know I went through the worst time of my life. And this individual was there. He helped me through it. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. That's why that's why we exist on this planet, is to help other people. And in doing so, we usually are helping ourselves, right? Yes, right. And so you have to, you have to give people that undivided attention, and you have to make people, you have to let them know that you are the priority right now. There's no other priority. And it's such a rich feeling to have.
I agree 100%. Everything you're saying, that's awesome.
All right. Well, I have Professor Tom, who's also our fire chief. I have Professor Lucas. And I think there's a lot in our last hour here that as people listen, they'll take a lot. It's a type of thing that I think people will be able to listen to more than once, because you guys said a lot of things in here that are valuable. And you're both in positions where, like, when somebody comes to you, like, for them, that moment is the precious moment of the day. Like, I got the chief, I have the professor. But for you, it's another person in the midst of it. So the ability to turn and focus and give that person the attention that they deserve, you know, is something that I really respect. And I also agree, Tom, when you talk about the life lived when you're doing that, that it's enriching for you two, for those of us in leadership positions, you know, as much as it is for the people who come to seek, you know, the guidance. And that's, I think, when it's, Tom, you made a comment once in one night, we were talking about people passing and the difference between the people who have passed in front of you, who lived the life that they were comfortable with, and the people who were passing that had a lot of regret or remorse. And those two people do not pass in the same manner.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's something that's been just drilled into my head, and it's not words, it's a look. And you can see people in their last moments of life, that are proud, that are like, I wouldn't change a thing, right? I wouldn't change a thing. And then you see other people with regret, and it's like, we don't know when that time is. And so you have to start living a life where you don't have that regret. And normally that means a life of giving to other people, yes, being vulnerable and accepting people into, you know, those relationships. And so, yeah, it is a very, I'm not in the field to see those looks anymore, but the time I spent in the field, I'll never forget it.
Well, Professor Lucas, thank you again. Another well-led podcast. Thank you for everything you did in the last hour. And Professor Tom, I'm really grateful that you took time with us. I think it was a great opportunity for me to have a chance to ask you some questions that if I had more time in our day, I'd be asking. Now I get to share the conversation, you know, with everybody who listens. So I'm really grateful.
No, thank you so much, Peter, for make this available for everyone. It's always a pleasure to be here with you. And thank you, Tom, to make the time, that busy agenda, to be here with us and share a little bit your lessons, like your jiu-jitsu lessons and relationship with the life and leadership. So really appreciate that. I hope you guys have fun today the same way that I did.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the invite onto the show, and I love training with you guys. All of our students, all of the students we train with are amazing. And they, you know, we were talking so much about what jiu-jitsu does to our personal life and our professional life. I want all of the students to hear this, the white belts, that the things that they've already done in their life, they're bringing to the mat, and right, we're growing from that. And so it's a two-way street. And I will never say a bad word about my old gym, because I love those people. But the gym we're at now, it's like the perfect puzzle. And every time we sign someone up and they start, I'm like, I don't know how you fit in here, but it's perfect. You're exactly what we needed. And so I feel so blessed to be a part of this experience, and to share it with you too, and all of our teammates at our gym. And man, I just, trust me, I'm the one being blessed here. It's not them. Every time I get a chance to coach or someone asks me a question, I feel so grateful for all of that.
Thank you, Tom. Well, Professor Lucas, good luck tomorrow. Today is July 29th, and on July 30th, our champion will be fighting at a local jiu-jitsu tournament. So we're going to be cheering for you there.
Thank you, Peter, for you as well, my friend.
I'm in the old... There's nobody old enough to fight me. There's nobody that is my age and a beginner, because all of those people were not, there was nobody to be found with that type of either idiocy or courage. So if you're listening to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset, I hope that today was another bit of encouragement to stay on the journey or to start your journey. And with Professor Tom, I think you got to hear about somebody who came to the jiu-jitsu journey very consciously, and as an adult, and even for him, the values and the benefit of studying jiu-jitsu unfolded over time. It wasn't immediately apparent to him. He had to stick with it, and as he, you know, continued on his journey, his practice deepened. And so not only did he develop a lot of physical techniques that gave him a greater vocabulary in jiu-jitsu, but he got a lot of techniques that affected his personal life and his professional life. And that expanded his ability to become the person that he wanted to become. And I want to encourage you, if you're in that spot where you're thinking about, should I start or should I keep going? That we're all examples of that at one stage or another. We have me as the very beginner, and then we have our Professor Lucas has been at this the longest, and then Tom in between us. It's meant something to all of us in a different way, and we know that if you start your journey, it will mean something very important to you.